Welcome back to the Workspace Podcast. I am your host, Justin Moran. Today is episode 2 of a 2-part series we did with Julia Geisman of Career Agility. So if you didn't hear episode 1, hit pause, go back, find episode 1, and come back to us here. Have a listen and let us know what you think.
Okay, so the first group of companies are around recognizing the need to do something. They want to get something going, or they're already in progress and process, but they have no baseline.
Right.
And then there's the second group of people. So the first group is what we really are interested in. Then there are companies that are being shamed into doing something about it.
You've seen a headline about them, maybe.
There are a good number of companies that fall within that category. There's public pressure put on them to do something. And, you know, if a company is smart enough, they'll say, how are we going to attract talent? What happens if people decide to boycott us by not buying our product?
Yeah.
I mean, Uber experienced that with the first immigration ban. The taxi drivers in New York City went on strike. And Uber continued to go out to the airport, and 200,000 people dropped the Uber app.
Oh, wow.
So we, as a consumer base, talk with our wallets.
Right.
And we are paying attention.
Yeah.
And then there's the third type of companies. They're being financially pressured into it. In that, for example, State Street Global Advisors will not support board members unless there's a woman in the mix. So they'll withhold their proxy. The pension fund here in Massachusetts is the same thing. They will not support companies unless they have a gender mix on their boards. So there's some pretty hefty financial implications to it. And just recently, the shareholders of Nike sued the board and Knight, the founder of the company,
For lack of diversity.
And sexual harassment and a toxic environment. Shareholders,
wow.
Yeah. So people are becoming much more active around this. Now, California just passed a law saying that every public company that is based in California has got to have female representation on the board. And this goes back to the question of, do you legislate change or do you wait until change organically evolves? And the answer is, in my opinion, you have to legislate it first. Because if we have a problem that has persisted for an extended time period, it's not going to organically go away. So there are ways of legislating change such that it's almost invisible. And so going back to the whole gender equality within an organization or changing a culture within the organization, if you have policies and processes in place, you will deal with the implicit biases that exist within the workplace because people have to comply too. And maybe one generation or two generations down the road, people say, oh, yeah, it's normal.
It's just the norm. Yeah.
It's just the norm. And you can see that here in the United States, you know, with the equal rights or the Civil Rights Amendment. But now what you're seeing, especially with the younger generation, you have more interracial dating. Take a look at the commercials on TV. You know, so that's an example of a legislative change that caused or resulted in a shift in awareness. In this case, more inclusivity.
So it's almost like a legislative change is needed at the top, but more day-to-day things around measurement and advancement for the masses.
Absolutely. And in fact, with any diversity or inclusion, there's an interesting distinction between diversity and inclusion. You know, it's almost like a cliche now. Diversity is being asked to the dance. Inclusion is actually being asked to dance. Okay?
Yeah.
So people in this space will go back and forth. Let me give you another example. With George W. Bush's cabinet, you had a lot of visual diversity, but they had groupthink. They thought exactly the same.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
So you can have visual diversity, but it doesn't mean that there's going to be differences in opinion or perspectives.
Right.
The other thing around this is that when you understand the value of doing this and you're willing to be held accountable for it, that's powerful. So you had asked me the other day, what companies do you go after? And I said the first category, which are those companies that really understand the value of it. But also, we will not work with a company unless, number one, the CEO is involved.
Okay.
And number two, they are committed to implement on the recommendations that we make based upon what their needs are. If they don't follow through with implementing the data, the outcomes of the data, it will create tremendous cynicism in the company.
Sure.
Because some of the comments we have gotten before in the qualitative open-ended questions were, oh, we've done this before and the information just goes into a black hole. We never hear back.
Yeah, right.
So one of the things that we always recommend to our organizations is make sure you have a comprehensive, consistent, robust communication process around gender, because that is another way of changing culture.
Right.
And you can see that today in what's going on politically.
When you're out collecting the data, it's a survey, you mentioned. At the beginning of the survey, does it say we're doing this because we want to change in some way? Or
so we actually have a multi-step process. First of all, it's important to say that this is online.
Yeah, right.
And it's anonymous.
Yeah.
So we work with the organizations up front to help them craft an email coming from the CEO as a heads up. This is why we're doing it. We're doing it. This is why we're doing it. This is what we want to do with the data. We'll keep you informed.
Mm-hmm.
And then we work with the organization to craft the cover email from us and also the welcome page on the survey. For several reasons, we want to make sure that we use language that's familiar to the culture of the organization.
Okay.
And that it will support what's coming out of the CEO, the C-suite. And then we have follow-up emails sent out to those people who haven't responded yet. So again, it has to come out of the C-suite.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people will think it's not important.
And what's the response rate you get?
Well, it depends. It's somewhere between 60 and 70-75% response rate.
It's not bad.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. It gives us a real good view of what's going on within the organization.
So tell us about your company, a little bit more about how you're structured and what's even the name of your company.
The company I founded is called Career Agility. It was founded upon the notion, well, first of all, my passion for advancing women in the workplace, because one day I just got really upset about the fact that there are not enough women in leadership roles at all. So I just said, I got to do something about this.
Okay.
But also, knowing what my systemic thinking is I took a look at the organization and I took a look at the women, because I work with women. You know, I've observed women over many years. And we have the data, again, to support this, that women are still struggling with the integration of their personal and professional goals. It's still a struggle.
Hmm.
They have a struggle around self-promotion. They have a struggle around being able to comfortably articulate their value.
They don't want to toot their own horn.
They don't want to toot their own. We're conditioned into not tooting our own horn.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, we have fairy tales. The self-limiting stories.
Yeah, right.
I can tell you what Snow White and how deadly Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs are as far as the message to little girls.
Yeah.
So we have the self-limiting stories. But then you have the corporate environment, which is non-inclusive. So you have to look at both of them if you're going to have a sustained outcome, a result. Sustainability is a big issue. You have to create an environment that is inclusive in which women are heard and advanced equally to that of men.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have women who are really good in understanding how to integrate their personal professional goals and in articulating their value. So Career Agility basically has two tracks, which are interdependent with each other. Because if you have a group of women that are really together and the organization is non-inclusive, you're going to lose those women. And there's case after case after case of that. If you have an organization that is really inclusive and committed to advancing women and the women aren't taking advantage of it, then the organization gets cynical and says, see, we put all this money into these initiatives and we're still losing women. What's up? And they'll become reluctant to invest any further. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you were talking about some of the recommendations that we make. Some of them are around developing women. For example, having leadership peer groups for women. You need leadership peer groups in general because as people move into more and more responsibility, they have fewer and fewer people to go back to and problem solve.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the leadership challenges with an overlay of women. you know, the gender piece on it. Having a leadership peer group for women does a number of different things, one of which is giving you a safe space to talk about issues.
Right.
The other is building a network. The men have a good network.
Yeah.
Women typically don't have that same network.
The good old boys network.
Yeah, we need the good old gal network.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So it gives them an environment with which to build their network, and they can mentor each other. And that is also an environment where they can start bringing other women along in the organization.
Sure.
Okay. And then we have a series of ebooks for women to increase their success in looking at the issues that they have to look at as far as their personal and professional goals, and, you know, help them become more comfortable in articulating their value. So that's one track. But the real point that we find is the one that has the most impact right now is the scorecard, the LEAP scorecard.
Yeah.
So that's basically our flagship. But we also offer additional services or products around that. One is, you know, making sure there's a strong communication strategy. And if organizations can't do that, then they can hire us to do that.
So what does that mean specifically? Policies and procedures and advice for everybody, just how to bring certain issues to the right people's attention? What does that mean?
The communication strategy, it's really of reinforcing the value of gender diversity, how it's affecting innovation, how many women have moved up in the ranks.
Okay.
As reporting back on the findings of the scorecard, recommendations, what the strategy is about doing what when. So it's the constant communication. And then we also offer several workshops, one of which is, for lack of better terminology, cross-gender communication, because men and women do speak a different language, even though the words sound the same.
Mm-hmm.
The intention and behavioral expectation behind them is really quite different, which gets in the way of team building and certainly gets in the way of women advancing. And then we also have a workshop on unconscious bias and behavioral expectations, which is really a subset of the communication workshop. Those three services are designed to help change the culture.
Do you witness barriers being broken down in these workshops? Do you see how people are like changing as you're going through it, or is it lip service?
Well, the interesting thing when it comes to especially the communication workshop, men don't think they need to learn how to communicate more effectively. It's the women. And the women are the ones that say, why are we always the one that has to change? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, why are we the ones? And my response to that is because we're the disruptors. We're talking about changing the status quo. And so if you want to change the status quo, then you need to understand how the status quo thinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes things come out of your mouth, you don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've experienced that, but I certainly do. And I was talking to a Mexican friend of mine that I'd known for many years, and he said to me, how do you deal with a gringo world?
What does he mean by that?
Well, you know, he's Mexican, you know, much more heartfelt and so forth. How do you deal in a gringo world? And I heard myself saying, I dance with them until I seduce their heart and then I can play with them.
Okay.
Which is exactly how I operate. I figure out what the rhythm is and then I match them.
Yeah.
And then I can lead because there's a trust there.
Sure.
Yeah. That's one of the ways that women really need to have our own power, because oftentimes I'll hear women, well, we don't have any power. I say, yeah, you do. You just have to own it. And
right.
You have to understand how to use it effectively, as opposed to crashing down the barriers, which is why the conversation hasn't changed for 40 years, is understand where people are at, dance with them like Beauty and the Beast, and we'll transform things.
Yeah. So I'm a father of twin daughters that will be 8 in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
What advice do you have for me? I've gotten rid of the word bossy. That's not allowed in our house. You know?
No, it's not.
It's not the right thing to say. It's not the right way to describe anybody, man or woman. But what advice do you have for me?
Let me just say one thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So another gripe that women have is they come home after a hard day and they just, And invariably their partner will start problem solving. And it's like, really? All we want to do is vent. Don't solve the problem yet.
Yeah.
You know, because we're more expressive. You know, one of the things that you can do with your daughters, and this is a problem that many women experience, is mansplaining.
Okay.
Interrupting, talking over, not acknowledging their ideas. These are all kind of respectful practices that we need with each other anyway. But women will tell you that men will explain things that they had just said for them. Or, you know, you'll be in the middle of a conversation or, you know, thinking you're in the middle of sharing something. Then all of a sudden it's like he interrupts. And it's proven. There was research done on this. The number of times that men interrupt women is significantly more than the times they interrupt their male counterparts.
Mm, I believe it.
You know, listening, it's an art form.
Yeah, that's why we have two ears and one mouth, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah, I like that
one.
Well, how can people get a hold of you?
Career-agility.com. Just go to the website and there's an info at career-agility.com. Just reach out to us. But we are totally committed to affecting change within an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And ensuring that an organization creates an environment where everybody has an equal voice and equal advancement opportunities, mm-hmm. regardless of what their skin color is, their gender, their nationality, their age. Because humans are a great resource. And if you don't have a fully engaged group of people, you're not going to have a fully profitable organization.
Right.
We're really committed to that. Obviously, our passion is around advancing women because that's what I know. And I have firsthand experience of what it's like to be demeaned and to be a lone voice. And so from that experience grew Career Agility.
Now, you only work with larger companies. There has to be a certain threat. Typically, it's 500 employees and above, right?
Yeah, we like a base of 500 because it's confidential, protects people's identity, and mm-hmm. also gives us quality data. So, for example, oftentimes the executive suite have fewer people in there. And so what we end up doing is combining the men and the women's comments into just the executives.
Right.
Because we want to protect people's identity, but we also want to be sure that we have good data. That's why we look at companies that are 500 or more.
Right.
And we can do this on an international basis. We can do it with a mega company, you know, hundreds of thousands of employees, and just look at one division because there are different departments. One of the things that we do is we ask some demographic information at the very front end to identify the respondent's position, their gender, and the department in which they work. So when we provide the final report to an organization, we have a broad sweep. Generally, this is where your organization stands on a 10-point scale. Okay, because all the questions are, rate the degree to which you agree with the following statement. And so it's a 10-point scale. And we do that specifically because we want to granularize responses. People have said to me, why don't you just do it on a 5-point scale? Well, you do it on a 5-point scale, and invariably people will be, you know, right at the 3, you know, which is a very ambiguous space.
Yeah, right.
So we say 10-point scale, and any movement, even if it's 0.1, is important because of the magnitude of the change within an organization around gender diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And so any movement forward or any movement back is important to be able to capture. So we have demographic questions. We do the final report is a broad brush view of the organization. If the organization wants, we can do a deeper dive into the various departments so that they can identify the best practices within each one of those departments or the areas where they're most vulnerable. The thing that is most unique about what we do is we say, okay, here's the evidence, here are the recommendations, and oh, by the way, we're going to hold you accountable for doing something with it. Therefore, you develop the implementation strategy, which includes policies, procedures, workshops, etc. We'll review your strategy. You do the tactical plan. We'll review that. And then we're going to check in with you on a quarterly basis for a year, 3 additional times, to be sure that things are moving forward. There may be some unintended consequences that evolve. So we're there to provide additional support, additional eyes or ears. With our background in OD and change management, organizational development and change management, we bring a professional perspective to that. We do that because, number one, we want to protect the client's investment because it's an investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a significant investment. Number two, we want to hold them accountable. Number three, we want to honestly protect the integrity of our product.
Sure.
Because people say, oh, it doesn't work. It's like having great technology. If you only use a certain portion of it, you don't have a lot of loyalty. And number three wants to stay close to the client. That's what we do. And it's interesting because one of my clients said to me recently, he said, I really like the way you hold her feet to the fire. And I said, yeah, otherwise things would get lost.
It makes sense. I mean, why would you start it to begin with if it's just going to be shelfware?
Right.
It has to be implemented.
Yeah, which is one of our criteria of engaging with a company. If you're not really willing to follow through on this, we don't want to work with you.
Right.
Because it's not worth your investment. Maybe that's stupid. Maybe a guy would say, oh, yeah, just sign on the dotted line and not worry about it. But I do worry about that. So Career Agility is completely focused on gender equality. We do find other related diversity issues that emerge out of the qualitative data. Because as I said, we have quantitative data, which is strictly rating things mm-hmm. on the 10-point scale. And then we have open-ended questions at the end. So people can have an opportunity to say what they want to say.
Right, and just make a general comment about diversity.
A general comment. It could be about diversity.
Gender.
It could be about diversity. It could be about one of the specific topic areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be about development opportunities or advancement opportunities or workplace flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So they give us more data. So, for example, we're just finishing up a project now where we had 2,000-plus respondents. And out of that, 886 people provided open comments to the tune of about 2,400 comments. So we mine that. We look at all those comments in order to identify certain trends.
Right.
And then say, okay, based upon the sample for this group, this topic, the sample of the comments, here's some things you want to know about.
So the people you're engaging with might have results that they had no idea would be brought up.
Yes. The type of results that we get are great for confirming what companies know already, for confirming that what they're doing has a degree of success, and for identifying problem areas that they didn't know.
Mm.
Or they knew, but they didn't realize the degree to which they were problem areas.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they set their priorities. You know, once you have data, you can be much more thoughtful
right.
about how you proceed. You know, so for example, a lot of companies are doing employee resource groups. Well, one of the questions we have, do you think that employee resource groups, ERGs, help attract and retain high-performing women? And we get a lot of I don't knows to the statements. Well, that's a problem. If an entry-level man doesn't know something, then the question is, what happened in the orientation process? How come you don't know this?
Yeah, where did that break down?
Right. Yeah, where did that break down? Because ideally, there should be no I don't knows. Everybody should be well informed, and that's part of the communication strategy. What are the policies and procedures?
Mm-hmm.
What are the accountabilities? What are the flex time policies? That's a big one. What we find is flex time is implemented in some groups better than other groups. One of the things that women say pretty consistently is if they take flex time or they have to leave early for childcare purposes, it's held against them.
Huh.
Or another thing that has been emerging is that women who take maternity leave oftentimes will get demoted. They get moved into other positions that has less responsibility. Sometimes it's because of that notion that a male may have, she's not going to be as committed.
Right, because now she's got a kid.
Yeah, now she has a kid. And that came out of the Lilly study that I just read.
Wow.
Or they think that, you know, she's going to need more flexibility. Therefore, we don't want to give her really major projects and so forth. So there's certain assumptions that are made about women who have children. In fact, there was one comment from a client that said, from a woman who said, I'm afraid to have children because I don't want it to have a negative impact on my career. Sometimes women choose not to advance in their careers because it's 24/7 when you move into more and more responsible positions. Well, 24/7, that means that they're constantly tied to the office. Where do they have time for their family? You know, one of the recommendations we make around flex time is make sure you don't schedule early morning or late afternoon meetings so that people, not just women, but men and women mm-hmm. who have family responsibilities or, for example, childcare, they have time to drop their child off at childcare and to pick them up. But people who don't have children don't think about that.
Right. So you may be, based upon your culture, inadvertently suppressing someone that could be a rock star because they're almost afraid of the responsibility.
Yeah, or if you're a single person or you don't have children, you don't think about those issues.
Yeah.
You just don't. But, you know, that becomes a little bit challenging when you have an international company or you're dealing with multiple time zones. It's like, how do you manage that? There are some logistical issues, but every company can work it out.
Yeah, sure.
It's just the consistency of scheduling early morning or late afternoon meetings. It's fascinating.
It is.
It's a very complex and yet pretty common sense issue.
Right.
It's just people who are in power, number one, need to understand that when you share the pie, there's many more pies to come, you know, as opposed to hoarding everything. So the people in power need to understand that it's okay to share because they too will prosper.
So what advice do you have for small to medium-sized businesses that don't have the resources or scale to implement a project with you guys? What should they start to think about? How can they create their own baseline and start implementing change?
It depends upon where they are in their life cycle. If it's a relatively new company in a startup phase, all systems, regardless, tend to be backburnered because revenue is the important thing. And then once you stabilize your revenue, then you'll deal with your systems. So even when you start out, understand that you want to have a balance of people. And it's pretty obvious what that balance is. I ended up talking to a CEO of a startup. He had two other partners, another guy and a woman. He said that he speaks differently to his male counterpart than he does to his female counterpart. He didn't say that in a demeaning manner. He just recognized there were differences. You know, so recognize there are differences in the way people communicate and value those differences.
That is solid advice.
Okay, so that's one thing. The other, just notice things.
Sure.
What's going on? Who's moving up in your organization? Don't advance people out of perfunctory.
For the sake of
it. For the sake of doing it. Yeah. In fact, that's a big blowback that oftentimes we hear, which is, well, you know, nobody should have preference over me, a white man. Well, it's not that we're having preference. We just want to have an equal playing field. Interview multiple people. Make sure you ask the same set of questions. Have multiple people within your organization interview that person. Have a checklist, you know, where you rate each question on a scale of 1 to 5 or whatever scale you want, 1 to 4. And if you have multiple people interviewing that same person, get together and compare your scores. So, and make sure there's a mix of people. If there are people of color within your organization, have a person of color, have a woman, have a senior level person, have a, you know, entry level person, whatever. Have those people be diverse. Now, you can do that in some companies. If you're a really small company, you just have to begin to understand what your biases may be. I used to teach at BU's part-time MBA program, Boston University's part-time MBA program. It was really interesting because one of the things that I know as a woman, that typically we have to like you. We can't work with you.
Yeah.
And for the man, it doesn't matter whether or not they like you, just as long as you can get the job done. So what I always say to the men is spend a little bit of time developing a relationship with the woman rather than telling her how great you are off the mark. Whereas with the women, let the man tell you how great he is first, and then you meet his competency. And then worry about the relationship secondarily. So it's just the reverse when you're going into interviewing.
Okay.
You know, this goes back to behavioral differences. I just alluded to the fact that women need to like you. And when we don't like you and you cross a certain line, you're dead meat. There's no point of return. Yeah. It's over. And we will take you down in the most insidious, indirect manner. That's something that men don't understand, that we really do need to like you. So build relationships. So for the men, this was a question for me. What do you do when you don't like somebody? So I asked the senior vice president of HR in a tech company once. I don't know what men do. Just like I don't understand how men negotiate. He said, well, first of all, it takes a lot for us not to like somebody. But if we're really at that point, we will invade their territory.
I've seen that.
Invade territory. That's terminology I would never think of using as a woman. Invade.
Yeah.
I started thinking about that, and I started thinking, huh, territory, that means there are boundaries.
Yeah.
Men's markings.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, these are my boundaries. So what happens is when a woman goes in for an interview, my observation is that men set up their territorial boundaries to feel really comfortable and secure, not because it's a one-up kind of it probably is, but it's because that's the place that he feels secure. So let them do that.
This is my playground.
It's my playground. And then you say, oh, gee, I can work out on the monkey bars too.
Yeah.
Just like you. So those are some of the subtleties that exist in understanding the dynamics between men and women. And this is why I said earlier, both men and women need to understand these differences if they're going to have a highly effective team. And if they're going to have a highly effective team, it means there's going to be equal voice. And all resources will be leveraged appropriately, which means that they're going to have a better outcome, which is a strong argument for ensuring that your workplace has enough women and people of color who are different than you, and to embrace those differences and actually celebrate them.
And for startups, it's something they should do right away because, as you said, you know, they're mostly in growth mode at that point.
Right.
And if the right development of a product or service gets them to that growth curve faster, you know, all the better.
Yes. And unfortunately, what happens is you oftentimes, especially the tech startups, mm-hmm. which seem to be, you know, the types of companies that fall in the startup world or yeah. under that umbrella,
yeah.
they're usually young men.
Mm-hmm.
who still have kind of like a good old boys frat boy mentality. And that's where you start. One of the things that I oftentimes will tell women is, look, take a look at the leadership. If you don't see any women in positions other than chief marketing officer or head of HR, just know that environment may be less supportive of women than what you would like. But when you see, you know, a female CFO, oh, and legal counsel is another typically female dominated within mm-hmm. an organization, or a CFO or a VP of sales, you typically can anticipate that that's a little bit more supportive.
Great point.
By the way, that's how gender diversity shows up.
How do you mean?
What the leadership looks like.
Oh, sure. Oh, yes.
So that's also another one you were talking about. What can smaller companies do? Take a look at your leadership team.
Mm-hmm. Look around.
Look around.
Start listening.
Yeah, exactly. And understand and, you know, avoid the excuse of, well, we can't find qualified women. Oh, yes, you can. You just have to know the networks and utilize your internal employees to get their networks. There are so many sources for people of color that we don't know about. Do some research.
Yeah, it does take work.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is find someone that looks like you, but
yeah.
Maybe you should think about doing some other things to find diversity.
Well, yeah, and that's the easy way. It's a short-term solution, but the long-term sustainability may not be there and probably won't be. You know, when you start out of the gate, make sure you are aware.
Well, I really appreciate the time you took with us today, Julia.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share what I've noticed, observed, and what we're doing at Career Agility. career-agility.com.
Yes, let's plug that again.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. And there's a number of other topics that we had talked about perhaps doing a podcast on, so maybe you'll come back and do another one with us.
It would be my pleasure, really. It's a delight.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Julia Geisman of Career Agility. I really appreciated Julia's time with us. I found the topic fascinating and certainly learned a lot, and I hope you did as well. If you enjoyed today's episode, please hit that subscribe button, leave a review, and share with your friends. The Workspace Podcast can be found on Apple Podcast or wherever you listen. If you have any interest in podcasting, please don't hesitate to reach out. The best way to reach me is info@workspacema.com. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you on the next one.